Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. This is episode 98, everyone. It is the post-Christmas, just before New Year's Eve episode. Our last episode of 2017. I am Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
So, we are coming to you the day after Christmas. We're recording. And I, of course, had a humongous shindig here, but Pearl, how did you spend your holiday? She didn't come over, by the way, you guys. The bitch blew me off.
Sure I did not, girl. I spent Christmas at my house with a group of some of my close friends and my little brother and stuff. So it was nice. We had my little brother cook. It was nice. It was a nice little intimate evening over in the Outer Sunset here in the city.
Girl, and when she says Outer Sunset, she means as far out as you can go without basically falling into the ocean, bitch.
Right, girl. I live right practically on the beach, girl.
She does. She's like 2 blocks from the beach.
Yes.
Which, by the way, really in San Francisco, that is not necessarily something that everybody wants because
I love it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely beautiful, but I remember when I first moved here, I was like, in Santa Monica or Southern California, if you're on the beach, girl, your rent is like through the roof because it's warm and beautiful and stuff.
Yeah.
Here in San Francisco, people are like, it's far away, it's cold, it's foggy, so.
But that's damn near, when you look at it, that's damn near anywhere in San Francisco. It's so funny because now that, like, I usually take like a Lyft line home late from work some nights, and I'll be in the Lyft with like other people going to the Sunset, and everyone that lives in the Sunset likes that no one else comes to the Sunset because we don't have to deal with the other city's bullshit, the rest of the city's bullshit. Mm. It's nice. It's so lovely. I love the Sunset. I've been out there for going on 8 years now.
When I first moved to San Francisco, I lived in the Sunset. I lived at 23rd and Ortega, and I mean, I didn't dislike it, but I definitely think that there's some disadvantages, but I am not like in the hubbub of everything either, and I like it over here as well because it's like, you know,
yeah,
convenient, but I don't feel like I have to deal with drama.
I don't feel like I've 23rd and Ortega versus where I'm at, which is right on Terraval.
Girl, I don't have this. Pearl's going to be like touching all this stuff and making every noise in the world.
You know how I do, girl.
Her jewelry.
So I don't have to deal with those disadvantages, I guess, per se. Like, I don't feel like I have many because I'm right where the train picks up. The train literally stops across the street from my house. It's a 24-hour train, so after midnight, it turns into a bus. And it's just so convenient for me.
Yeah, it definitely has its conveniences where you live versus other places, but I still think it's far from everything. Like, I remember when I first moved here, I was so fooled because I looked at a map and when I was moving into my place, I was like, oh, like, I'm only going to be like 3 miles from work or whatever. So mm-hmm. when I lived in Cleveland, 3 miles is usually 3 highway miles. So it's like 2 minutes. You know, you're like, get on the highway and you're there. So I'm like, oh, I'm only 3 miles from work. And then I get here and that 3 miles driving in 1999 when I arrived, girl, was like 50 minutes to get to work one way.
50 minutes?
Yeah. I worked all the way down in Financial District and I would go down and I would take like Lincoln all the way up. And then I would cut over and get on California.
It takes me about 30 minutes to get downtown from where I live, from the L or from the train. So, 15 minutes, that's insane.
Well, that's when I discovered that driving in San Francisco is often far less convenient than taking public transportation because,
yeah.
I mean, depending on where you're going and where you live and what you're doing and whatnot, but there's a lot of times that it's just far more convenient to just get on a damn train or a bus and zone the fuck out and not even worry about it.
Most of my friends that move here from out of the city, I always tell them, if you have a car, get rid of it. You don't need it here unless you're using it for work or something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that was my Christmas. It was really nice and lovely. We got to, the day before Christmas, me and my little brother spent the day, like, painting our living rooms and just fixing our living room up. So we...
Is AJ still living in there?
No. AJ was only staying for, like, 3 weeks. AJ is a dancer friend of mine who left and moved to Rhode Island and then moved to Portland and is now back in San Francisco and stayed with me for, like, 3 weeks. But he's out on his own living. He lives near Michaela now, which is right by the BART station in Oakland. I think that is where...
They live in Oakland?
Yeah.
Near 19th Street mm-hmm. BART station.
I think so. But they're walking distance to each other, so it's lovely. But he was sick for the holidays. He was supposed to come over and spend it with us, but
several of my friends got sick on Christmas? There were, like, several of them were sick.
Yeah. But we did have my little sis Tiny Teeth over. That was lovely, too. Yeah, girl. We have a new little electric fireplace in my house now. It's all mounted on the wall. It's pretty. I feel like I just did one of those television shows where you remodel your home since I've gotten rid of my last roommate. Oh
my God, it's one of those, like, makeover shows where they come in and fix up your apartment.
Yeah, my apartment looks completely different.
By the way, back in the day, when I lived in Cleveland, I would watch HGTV, and they always would have those things on. And, like, my roommate at the time would come home, and I would have, like, gone out while he was at work and, like, completely redid one of our rooms or something from some random shit. Now, I can't be bothered, but that was when I was in my 20s, and I was, like, constantly changing the look of our house, or, like, constantly, I would be like, I don't want to redo the whole living room, so I'm going to turn this area over here. I had this huge apartment. Be like, I'm going to turn this area into a sitting room, and I would, like, remodel, like, a corner and turn it into a sitting room or some random shit.
Cute.
But
that was mine. How was your holiday get-together here?
It was lovely. There were 58 people joined us.
Nice.
And what was especially nice...
Do you count the people?
I make them sign a yearbook, bitch.
Oh, that's cute.
Like, I was like... And then my one friend, like... Because I, for a while, like... So in the past, what has happened is... Usually at 1 o'clock, like right at 1 o'clock, I'll get like a rush of like maybe 10 people. And then people will trickle in. Well, this year it was really nice because somebody had to come at 11 a.m. because they're like, I have someplace I have to be at 2, but I'd like to stop by and whatever. I was like, sure, well, don't expect my full attention because I'm still getting ready. But so that person left at 1 o'clock when the party was supposed to start. And then other people, actually nobody arrived until 2 o'clock. The first guest arrived at 2 o'clock, which was super nice because I had like a half hour after I'd showered and everything to sort of just decompress. Everything was done. Everything was ready. Like, usually the guests start arriving and I'm still trying to put shit together and set it out and all this stuff. But this year, everything was set up. It was so lovely. But they were making fun of me because I make them sign this. So, look, here's Christmas 2015. Oh, 2013. Like...
Oh, you have them sign a little
note. Yeah, like, I have them sign every year. So, 2016. And then...
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, and then, like...
Uh-huh.
And then... 2017, and, like, all this, the names, and so I make them sign a little yearbook, and, because, I mean, some people just put their name in it, but some people write in it, like, a real yearbook. My friend Troy was, like, too cute to be forgotten, like, in a yearbook, and some other bitch wrote, see you after the summer, because it was, like, you know.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, I make them do that because, a lot of these people I don't know at all, or whatever. Like, one of my friends contacted me and was like, he's living in a rehab right now. Like, you guys who are listening, a lot of you probably are fully aware that many of my friends are in recovery, and some of them are, like, in rehabs or, like, halfway houses or stuff like that. So, one of my friends is in a rehab right now, and he was like, there's 4 guys here who don't have anything to do. Like, they don't have family or anything. Can I bring them? I was like, sure, whatever. So, just random people showed up, and it was I felt really good about being able to feed them and make people feel at home and, like... It's just a shitty day to be alone, you guys, because I was alone on Christmas 2004, and it was wretch. So, but I just, like, this morning I woke up, and I read through the what people wrote, and, like, a lot of people write really nice things about, like, memories of past Christmases that they've spent here, or one person's been here 7 Christmases in a row. Like, legitimately, I think the only time I ever see him is on Christmas.
Huh.
So, but it was lovely, and then we got a whole bunch of new people for the first time joining us, and yeah. But the thing that made it especially nice this year is that when people showed up at 2 o'clock, they showed up like in large numbers. But it was really pleasant outside, and I fixed my patio area, and like people, I posted a video of it on my Facebook page, you guys, if you're interested in going and seeing, like a little video of like the height of the. There was probably like 40 people here at one time, which is. Mm-hmm. Normally people come and go really quickly because they get here and they have to be inside and it's like cramped and they get over it and whatever. But this year everybody was just sitting around enjoying themselves, talking outside and mixing and mingling with strangers and friends. And it was lovely. I just had the most lovely time.
Well, that's Christmas. Christmas is finally over. I hope you guys enjoyed it just as much as we did. Next, around the corner, next week, New Year's.
New Year's Eve is on.
I am so excited.
Sunday night is New Year's Eve, and Monday is New Year's Day. Of course, I'll be at the lookout for New Year's Day for their New Year's Day recovery party.
Are you doing anything for New Year's Eve?
I don't think so. I just like to avoid holidays like that, where it's all about just being basically messy. I feel like that, so...
For the longest, I tried to avoid going out on New Year's because it's the hardest for me to get home on the holidays. But there was one year that I was offered to do a show, but I just didn't want to be out. But I came to the conclusion that, like, as an entertainer, I should want to be out performing on a big event like New Year's Eve. So this year, I'm really excited because I will be over at Asia SF and they do this big... special thing for New Year's. All the girls wear gowns and stuff on for the New Year's Eve shift. And they have like a special toast at the end of the night that I'm looking forward to. But if you guys are interested and want to come, go get you a reservation. I think there's still room. But it does pack up pretty quick. And they do... Their prices are a little bit more pricier than a normal night. Just so you know.
AsiaSF.com
is the website, yeah.
And go in there and get your reservations, girls. Mm-hmm. There were many, many years where I was working on every holiday, New Year's Eve, Halloween, all that stuff. And now if I'm offered something, I kind of weigh it like, is the money worth the annoyance? That's what I ask myself. Is the money worth the annoyance? If the money is not worth the annoyance, bitch, I cannot be bothered. I'm much more content just chilling. And plus, also on... New Year's Eve, and, like, in particular amongst a few other holidays, when fireworks and stuff go off, like, I feel... I like to be home with my dogs because the fireworks can freak them out and stuff like that.
Oh.
And so, I just prefer to be here, to be honest.
Yeah, with me, if I'm going to take just a regular show, it depends on the type of show. If it's something where I can do a production, I'm down because that's what I love about performance. But if it's just any run-of-the-mill show where... You know, it's nothing special. I'm probably not going to take it.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I'm looking forward to New Year's. Got my little outfits all ready and together. I'm excited.
Oops, excuse me. What are your New Year's resolutions, Perluqua?
To continue saving for these hips. To beat, to get over this not liking of my body phase. In life, to get it over with. I'm done with it. But just to continue saving, and I mean, my house is damn near where I want it to be. I think by the end of the first month of 2018, it'll look just how I want it to look, and my house will look like a grown woman runs the house. So I'm excited for that. And to finally join a gym. I was supposed to do that last year, but it never happened. But what I did do is I now have a better diet. So, you know, halfway there, you know, baby steps.
Well, my thing for New Year's Eve or New Year's resolutions is that I'm not, first of all, I don't want to do anything where I'm like, I'm stopping this or I'm cutting out that or because that's setting me up for failure. I want to say that I will definitely, I do want to go on a cleanse during January after all this holiday food is gone, because one of the downsides...
Oh, that's what you said last year.
And I do it every year. And, like, one of the things that's the definite downside of hosting a humongous party like this is the massive amount of food that's left over in my home. So, like, last year, for example, I took food all over the place and was giving it away to people and whatever. But this year, once January rolls around, my mom got me a Ninja for Christmas, and it's, like, great for making smoothies and stuff like that. So I'm going to start going on a juice cleanse again. I was on a huge juice and smoothie kick last year, and it really helped, like, cleanse out some of the nasty in my diet and get my body kind of righted for January and February and whatever. So that's part of it. I want to be more mindful of the shit I'm eating. So that is going to be a start. I'm not saying, like, I'm stopping this or quitting that or whatever, but I'm definitely going to be more mindful of my eating habits. I do want to try to get my body back in order a little bit, because I turn 45 at the end of next month, and I'm like, oh, girl, it's like becoming a now or never type of thing, because if you don't try to get it together sooner rather than later, once you start to get older, it's like your body's like, oh, that's a great idea, bitch, but we're vetoing that around here.
Right. I think after a certain age, if you're not in shape, your body just... gets older. It just ages.
So I'm gonna start being more mindful of it so that I can kind of
gracefully
pull myself together a little bit. I also, one of the things that I have decided I'm gonna do, I think, in the new year, is I'm going to start dating more regularly. And by that, I'm not talking like I have placed a really strong emphasis on the idea of, when I talk about dating, of like not even going out with people if I don't think there's some potential. And so I think I'm going to start going out with people, whether I think there's potential or not, if there's, like, you know, at least some attraction, just for the experience of going on dates. And I think I might start hoeing around more in the new year, because Pearl makes fun of me for it and doesn't even believe me, but I really don't sleep around. I really don't do any of this stuff. I kind of don't have any interest in that for the most part. But, you know, I'm figuring that I'm going to be 45, and before very long, I'm going to be too old and probably too unattractive for people to want to hit it. So I'm going to fucking try to get it right now while I can. I'm like, okay, you know what? There's still some people who are wanting to, like, get it on. Bitch, I'm sorry, but since I spent this year thinking I might end up in some kind of a relationship and that didn't happen, I'm fucking giving it away in gift baskets next year, bitch. Like, I am, like, every holiday, somebody's getting something good.
All right.
I'm like,
it's wrapped up real pretty.
I'm just telling you right now, like, you have to face the facts that I'm getting older. There is going to come a time when I'll be like, nobody wants this. Because, you know, you age out hella fast in the gay world. I still got it going on just enough.
Yeah.
That people will be like, oh, well, you're 45, but I'll still hit it, and I'll be like, you better get it while the getting's good, bitch. So, if it's
still good.
You know, because I fear that my punani probably has an expiration date on it, but since it's back there, I can't see it.
I have no idea. That's probably something you should look up.
When does your cooch age out? When it's the expiration date?
When is it worn out? When do you practically have... When does your walls run out of firmness, girl?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying... Listen, I said I was going to give it up. I didn't promise that there was any firmness in the walls.
Oh, shit. So it sounds like that, but...
If you want to stick your dick in some quicksand, go ahead. We got it right back there now.
That ship has sailed, ladies and gentlemen.
But, you know, I was thinking about that on the way home, because I was like, this idea, like, that I had that, you know, I was going to obviously not save myself for marriage, but... A big part of it is, like, I really don't want to have... I don't like sex that isn't emotionally connected or whatever. And so you can't get that by sleeping around. Like, you can't have an emotional connection.
But you also can't get that by not getting out the house and not dating.
But at the same time, it's like, well, you know what? I got plenty of emotional connection with the community and my friends and all this, so I better just be, like, giving up the hooch. Like, you know, like...
giving up the hooch.
Like, you know, So, I'm just gonna be like, you know what? It's gonna be like just free pussy. for the year.
I can't.
Just.
Not free pussy for the year.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just, I don't know. I don't know. But what I do know is that this idea of, like, you know, sitting around waiting for Prince Charming to come along.
That's and, never like, going to happen.
And sweep me off my feet.
Nope.
Yeah.
Girl, good luck.
I mean, and let's be honest. If you really think about it, Snow White was date raped, y'all.
Right.
She was passed out and men come up in the right. forest groping up on her.
Right.
Girl, that's not romance, so no. I don't know what the hell I'm thinking.
Right.
She got three fucking dwarves all fondling up on her ass when she's up passed out. Seven of them. The other four were maybe gay. That's why they weren't fondling up on her.
Maybe.
They're like, well, we'll do her hair, bitch. That's why she looks so pretty up in there. Like
I said, just make sure it's wrapped up nice and pretty. Speaking of which, did you get any gifts?
Okay. I got a gorgeous gift. Did you see the video that I posted on Facebook?
No, I did not see a video you posted
I posted a Facebook video.
Guys, I stayed steer clear of social media for the holidays. I was spending quality time with my loved ones. It was lovely.
Well, this was like 2 days before. So, a little backstory before I show Pearl. I posted this on Facebook, and the video has been viewed like 1,500 times, which is pretty shocking. But I received a gift that was so beautiful. I did not know. And it's so personal and took so much hard work. I did not know an appropriate way to thank the individual. Like,
what was it?
So every year, my friend Jenny Douglas, she's a drag performer. You've heard from Jenny about Jenny from Texas, yes. The one who named her cow Pearl for you and Pollo. So Pearliqua and I have cows named after us on Jenny Douglas's cattle ranch in Texas. Well, this year, Jenny brought me a gift, and normally we do a drag makeover for her, but the airline lost her drag bag this year, so we didn't get to do a drag makeover on her.
No.
Poor thing. But I'm going to... Hold on. I'm getting my gift and letting Pearl open it up.
Why are you making me open it? Oh, it's a Wonder Woman blanket.
More than that, girl. Hold on. I'm going to let her see. So I'm...
Girl, and you're never going to put it back in here.
I will. I've put it in several times. So first of all, you guys, it's got a personalized printed cloth.
Yeah, I see this.
Embroidered thing.
Oh, yeah, they can't see it.
So.
Clark Kent by day, Wonder Woman by night.
She took all of my bios and stuff that she found online and sort of congealed it together. But look, and also she's a great friend and a perfect therapist. I love you.
Who's a therapist?
So.
She's saying is she saying you're a therapist?
Yeah, she said so. But wait.
So where did she get this then? Is it a game?
No, oh, bitch, no, it's a quilt. It's a quilt. It is you guys, it is this gorgeous Wonder Woman quilt.
It's very cute, very comic booky. I love that. Come through, Wonder Woman, looking strong.
So,
I love it.
It's this gorgeous quilt.
Are you actually going to use it or are you going to keep it wrapped up?
I'll probably use it only periodically. I want to keep it wrapped up because, you know, the dogs sleep in my bed, so they'll destroy
it. Never.
So since the dogs are in the other room, I'll leave it out for now. So, but it's so beautiful.
Cute.
So
that's
I got
your favorite gift.
Well, I mean, it's so thoughtful. It had to be. It was hand custom made and everything.
You could just say yes, girl.
Yes, and then my mom also got me the ninja, which is lovely.
Oh, that was this year. She got it for you.
Yeah, she got me the ninja. Look, it's over there.
Okay, I thought you had something like that already.
I had the Nutribullet.
That's what you have.
But I burnt up the Nutribullet making too many smoothies in a bitch. So my mom bought the Ninja, the Ninja's like twice as big as it, and you can make all kinds of shit in it. I made a vegetable puree to put into my spaghetti sauce this year. I made a chip dip in it.
Come on, chip dip.
You want some?
You have chip dip still? Yeah, I'll have a chip dip.
Hold on. I'm going to go get her the chip dip.
Well, that's lovely. I got, like, a little speaker from my brother. I've got, I got some jewelry from one of my coworkers at Asia, who's really lovely. And, some little treats and stuff. And I still have more gifts coming up, so that's more to come. Well, I'm getting a tattoo, also. My partner's actually just gonna get me a tattoo for... Is this the right kind of chips to eat with dip?
Well, girl, I'm telling you. Y'all, it's like a cheesy, it's like the cheesy sour cream chip, which is the perfect chip to go with the dip. It's a
oh, it's good.
It's a bacon,
really good. Actually.
Yeah, it's a bacon cheese ranch dip that I make every year.
And kind of, it tastes kind of holiday-y too. Why does it taste kind of holiday?
I don't know, girl.
What is that?
I don't even know what the hell a holiday tastes like.
It tastes like Christmas.
Bitch, it is ranch dip with bacon and cheese in it, and she's all, it tastes like Christmas.
It does. It's like a, oh. Yeah. There's something kind of like, I don't know.
What the hell does Christmas taste like?
Well, I'm down. It's good. Good job, Poyo.
And then, hold on, I'm going to see if I got any more reindeer poop. I'm going to see if I can.
Reindeer poop?
I'm going to see if I got the reindeer poop. And then
I think I'm good off of that, whatever that is.
The reindeer poop is also delicious, but we got to find out.
If you guys think I'm going to eat anything called reindeer poop, lost your damn mind.
What the hell happened to it? I think somebody ate all the reindeer poop.
Gross. What was it? Were they brownies?
Not really brownies, but they're delish. Everybody loves them. That's why they may probably be gone.
Hmm. Well, that's lovely.
Y'all, so, to make that holiday extra special for my guests yesterday, I put out bowls of Swiss Navy lube sample packets.
Are they gone?
No. Girl, look, this is a lube, that's lube. Bitch, we got lube everywhere. But I put out a sign next to it that said, Merry Christmas, whore bags.
Oh, my God.
Help yourself to some Swiss Navy lube. So, everybody was loading up their whore bags, I'll tell you that. Like, plenty of whores left here feeling very happy to be lubed up.
You know.
They're going to be slipping right into 2018, bitch. Like me, I'm going to let 2018 slip up into me.
I cannot. That's, they say you are what you surround yourself with, so.
Well. That's it. Apparently, it's through the last 2 years of this podcast, so I'm going to become a whore bag.
Whatever, bitch. Oh, this was good. Thanks, Quayo.
I want to find out that, I'm looking for the reindeer poop.
It's gone, bitch.
I really do think people ate it. It was so good.
For real, though, can I get something to drink, though?
Okay, pause that, girl.
We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Rhett Matthews, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
All right, y'all, we are back. Pearl officially got her grub on.
It was cute.
So I was also giving her the recipe for how to make my, I call it my white trash chip dip, you guys. But if you want to make it at home, it's very simple. You take 1 pint or whatever of sour cream, put it in a dish. You mix in 1 packet of that dried ranch dressing dip, 1 thing of Bako's. And then you...
Girl, close the door.
Oh, my God. Hold, please.
Blow it up, girl.
I did not blow it up, bitch. Yes, you know I'm lactose intolerant.
You know you're lactose intolerant.
And then you mix in shredded cheddar cheese, or I like a cheese medley. You mix it in there, and then you blend it up, or mix it up.
Oh.
And it's a delicious chip dip. It's especially good if you leave it overnight, and I particularly like it if you make it with the real bacon crumbles, the kind that are like real bacon, and
you make bacon and you have it crumbled up.
Well, I like to buy it in the bags because I don't need to be doing all that extra bacon frying and whatnot. They have these bacon in a bag where it's real bacon. You can even see like the grease on the inside of the bag a little bit.
My brother did the crumbled bacon thing, but he actually made... One of the things he made was loaded potatoes.
Oh, I love those.
Oh, so good. And he had little bacon bits in it. It was good.
Yes, honey. Oh, I was like... While I was taking some time in my private room over there...
In the restroom?
Yes. I was going through pictures on Facebook, and there's so many photos. I'm so glad that my friends who are obsessed with taking selfies took some selfies at my Christmas party, because... Girl, when you got, like, almost 60 people and you're trying to feed everybody and they're showing up one after another after another, I barely got to leave the stove. Like, I was, like, just plating up food for everybody.
People must have been able to actually enjoy themselves without you in their hair. How nice.
Whatever, girl.
Well, I should have showed up.
it was lovely. And then, like, everybody was bringing so much food. We had two full, like, fold-out tables full of food. It was a lot of food, girl. A lot of food. So, it was wonderful. We had, girl, we had drag queens. We had porn stars. We had all kinds of people up in here. What, we had people from my wrestling gig.
Oh, cute.
Yep. We even had a baby up in here.
Did Miss Kikio make it out here?
No, Kikio's in Florida. But, like, look, there's, like, Sandra's friend, my daughter Cindra Rose, brought her girlfriend to spend the day with us, and her girlfriend brought her baby, and, like, y'all, we're looking at a little video. It's all the people. Look at all these people.
Uh-huh.
It's, like, and then the inside, too. We had transgender women. We had people of color. And even a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was so lovely. I was thinking about it, and, you know, I mean, besides the fact that I just love opening my home on Christmas Day to all these different people and whatever, I was really thinking about it, you know, when I was walking home, and, like, we had white people and black people and Asian people and Latino people, trans mm-hmm. people, straight people, babies, you know, like, Muslim people were here. Mm-hmm. And it was lovely because it was a great, it was just really, to me, was like, this is what the world really should be like. Everybody just gets together and everybody mm-hmm. just enjoys each other. And, you know, it was just fucking lovely. And it is why Christmas Day is my favorite day of the year, every year. Part of me wants to, like, find another day during the year when I can do this, you know, just to host some big shindig where everybody comes over.
Your birthday, girl.
But, girl, my birthday is, like, only 1 month later.
Sorry about it.
So
you got
maybe it could be, I want it to be something like maybe like in the summertime, maybe in July when, you know, nobody's got anything really going on or whatever.
What are you going to do in July? Nothing happens in July.
Bitch, it could just be, I could have a barbecue. I got a yard.
Okay. So what's the occasion?
Fucking a barbecue in my yard, bitch.
Well, you have fun with that. Good luck. Let me know how it goes. Maybe record that one too.
Girl, I mean, I think people would come. Whatever. First of all, people love just an opportunity to get together. And I got a lovely yard. And
only one way to find out, bitch.
It's true. All right, you guys. Should we go to our pre-recorded interview?
Who do we have?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had music producer Frank Music on with us. And I promised you guys, the second part of his interview, we were just trying to wrap up. And then we sort of got, like, launched back into a whole new conversation. And it was very interesting. He has some pretty controversial ideas and perspectives on things. And a lot of it, honestly, I agree with. But sometimes there was, like, there's some stuff in there that I was like, I've never said this on the podcast before. But, so we're going to go to the second half of our interview with Frank Music, the music producer. And then when we complete that, we are going to do a retrospective of some of my favorite parts of the year. We've had some great guests on this year. We've had Oscar winner Patricia Arquette with us. So I can only imagine that there's something from that there's so many things from that, honestly, that stand out when she was talking about her sister Alexis. We had Kelly Clarkson on with us this year, and that was incredible. I mean, she was such a wonderful guest. We've had some really, really interesting interviews over the course of this last year, and we are going to take you to some highlights from those interviews, but, that is only going to set us up, that just sets us up for an even more amazing 2018, I feel like. So, we're going to go to that now, and then Pearl and I will be back to wrap this episode up once we've given you Frank Music and our retrospective of some of our favorite celebrity highlights from this year. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by Daddy's Barbershop, located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro. Daddy's was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Visit Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop. Daddy's Barbershop is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. To stay abreast of everything that's happening down under, visit Australia's premier LGBTQ website, GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com includes celebrity interviews, travel updates from around the world, pride-related coverage from events all across the world, as well as updates on everything that is new, exciting, and happening in queer nightlife down under. Visit GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
Well, Frank, I appreciate, I guess I should call you Vincent. Vincent, I appreciate you talking today, and I really feel enlightened by your perspective. And I think
thank you.
Yeah, I think it's valuable. And I, again, especially after what some artists could have taken as a complete faux pas of outing you when you're not out and outing you when you're not gay. And, you know, that could have been taken by some people as really, I don't know, offensive. And I appreciate not only you being so easygoing about it, but actually talking to us and talking to me, in, you know, even in the wake of that.
Well, I would like to, my biggest thing that I try and learn now I'm in my 30s is to be less of a hypocrite. And I want to be as intellectually honest and balanced in everything. And I want to live in a world where we are post-sexuality, post-racial. We just are people with ideas and we help each other as best as we can. And the labels kind of disappear. So if I was to get a stick up my ass about someone accidentally, you know, outing me, I mean, that doesn't say a lot for my principles.
Well, I do appreciate that. And I think that, yeah, it's, again, I think it's very interesting. I 100%, well, going back to our early conversation, I think that even within the LGBTQ community, that we are putting ourselves in such small boxes that it separates us more than it brings us together.
That's a huge conversation I would love to have. And especially, I mean, it's kind of sad being a heterosexual and I'm talking about communities that, of course, I don't have any skin in the game, sort of, you know, figuratively or literally speaking. But it is very true. I mean, I've been kicked out of gay bars for being straight. And
what?
And that... Oh, yeah, it only happened like once, but it was, you know, just there. I think we need to have like an honest, I hate this phrase, conversation. I hate everyone saying we need to have a conversation. So, yeah, but I guess we do need to have a conversation, just because it was a less irritating word. But the first thing that confuses me as a heterosexual male that I am is like, I'm confused by why gender and sexuality need to be so tightly knit together. I think that we need to sort of, there's this sort of minefield right now. I mean, as you just said, the LGBTQ. I think we need to just lose those labels because this group is eating itself in terms of these subcategories. There needs to be an overarching goal. You know, not like a sort of a greater good goal, but like sort of where is the community trying to get to instead of, as you say, subgrouping itself at every level? And if you are subgrouping, why are you subgrouping? Is it, and this is the thing, the motives behind subgrouping is what slightly bothers me, because I feel it's to try and, someone wants to be more of a victim than someone else. It's like, well, yeah, you're just trans, but I'm trans and well, you know, whatever. And I'm da, 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 and da. And it's almost like a freaking, you know, game of poker, who's got the highest hand. And I just remember when it just used to be fun. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. It's been so politicized now, and it's a freaking minefield. And I've just seen a couple of my friends, oh, they're not friends anymore, but, you know, I've seen a couple of big people in the London scene just, I don't know what they've done, they just, like, completely smashed to bits. The sort of the whole it was fun, and they, you know, they're on TV like saying a bunch of crazy stuff about things that they don't know enough about, and it's, and using being gay as the reason for saying really ignorant crap. Now, I remember when it was the other way around, you know, when a lot of straight people were saying a lot of ignorant crap, you know, about gay people, and I think history can teach us a little lessons, and we need to just sort of be a bit more sensitive to each other rather than be like, well, you're not this and I'm that, and therefore you need to feel more sorry for me and, you know, go fuck yourself and all this. It's ludicrous. If you're gay, great. If you're straight, great.
If you've got something between your legs, great. If you haven't, who cares? We're not living it. I think that we keep on trying to claim that we live in a world which is constantly oppressing people. I'm not trying to oppress anyone. I'm a white cisgender male, you know, and I'm apparently the cancer of the earth, according to most media outlets. And I think if you keep on saying that kind of stuff, people are going to believe it, and they're going to believe they're victims, you know. And people, we're talking about musical enclaves and people just sort of in the mind ghetto. You know, people won't go and do the research to prove otherwise. If, you know, a big media corporation is saying, no, this, they're going, yes, you're right. You know, and then they're not doing any research. And that's just like the music. If you're not doing any research, you're not learning anything. And, you know, that's what's so great about what you're doing is you're trying to create a resource for people to speak about stuff they know about. And that's why I will only say that much on the subject, because I'm not fully educated and I'm not articulate enough. But it's just the kind of things I've noticed in the last 10 years and how it's changed.
Well, what I can say, and again, this is coming from another white cisgender individual that, and I honestly don't even like the term cisgender, and I've never said that on this podcast, but I don't like it. I don't understand. I'm not going to, you talk about a landmine and a minefield, and that's one of them that I've sidestepped for 2 years. I'm not going to go into it now, but.
It's so weird. I totally agree. I mean, I had someone say to me, so how do you feel about your gay fans? And I was like, what does that mean? Like, I don't care if they're gay. You care if they're gay. I don't. You know, you care that I'm straight. I don't. It's just so, it's very, very interesting to me, because I don't, you know, if we're living in a world of sexual harassment, the first thing I don't want to know is your sexuality. Because I shouldn't be concerned by your sexuality, should I, if we're all sexually harassing each other?
Well, you know. I will tell you, as a journalist, there was a time 10 years ago, or 5 years ago probably even, when that was one of my key questions, like, what is your connection to the LGBTQ community, and what has
which
been...
Which is fair, by the way, which is totally fair. I don't want to sound like that's not a valid question.
And
it's
what...
just how I took it.
And what has been your interaction with your gay or lesbian LGBTQ fan base? Now, the reason that that was more common for me a decade ago was because as a journalist, I would often interview artists who had, for example, a limited connection with or interaction with the LGBTQ community. And that was the one place of commonality that I could find, like their following, their support. And
totally fair.
And what has thankfully happened as my career progressed and over time is that, first and foremost, I think that with the rise of the internet and with the way society is evolving, people have become more socially conscious to LGBT-related issues, so their fan base is not necessarily the only thing one has to talk about. Secondarily, right. People have often, that I pursue for interview, generally have either spoken out about or been actively associated with people within the LGBTQ community. For example, yourself, I can, as opposed to asking about something so general like your fan base, which you could very validly say, you know what, I don't really produce music to think who's going to follow me. And if it so happens that I have gay fans, then that's fantastic. If I have black fans, fantastic. If I have fans somewhere in Asia, you know what I mean? It's like, It would really be no different than if I said, so tell me about your following in Asia. What do you, you know, like, what do you think of your Asian fans? I mean, you probably don't have a great deal of thought on that.
Which is funny. Ironically, I do, but I won't, because I had a hit in China by accident and I found out about my sort of Chinese fans. That's the thing with Asia, dude. But that's the thing. I think when you ask the question racially, like, what do you think about your black fans, instead of, say, what do you think about your gay fans, they are two different questions, I actually think, because with sexuality, as I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, I feel the community, as it were, of the community I've been involved in, sort of the West London gay crowd, in the East London gay crowd, and then moving out to West Hollywood, that is a literal thing I can put my finger on. Now, I think if someone was to ask the question, what do you think about your black fans? I'd be like, well, which ones from which country? You know, that to me, that is way more broad. And I don't even think it's like an edgy question or anything. It's just racially defined. defining people in that question is so vague. That's all it is, really. It's like, I mean, if you do ask me, like, you know, what do you think about your black fans from the Hamptons, then you've made it a bit more specific, you know. But I don't think anyone's race really... That's the thing. It's about what's in someone's head that matters. It's what Martin Luther King said, isn't it? I want people, my children to be judged by the content of their ideas, not by the color of their skin or whatever. And that's what needs to happen. I think the one thing I'd like to see, and I didn't really ask a question about this, but I'm still waiting for someone to give me a solid answer. Now, my uncle, back in the day, I think in the 70s, he had a sex change in the 70s, right? This isn't like, you know, the world that we're now living in is, you know, Jenna, whatever her name is. I'm talking like, what? Caitlyn Jenner, right? I'm talking about the 70s when no one gave a crap. And it was like space technology if you were having any surgery like that done. You know, Andrew had the surgery and then, you know, lived his life as a lady and lives in the south of France with his wife, her wife, right? So I grew up always knowing I had a trans uncle who I'd never met. I've never, to this day, met. And so I knew about transgenderism from the age of 5 years old. And I had to learn that my uncle removed his genitalia to then still be married to a woman. That's when I realized that the LGBTQ, the T, needs to be its own thing. Because I think lumping sexuality and gender identity together is a really silly thing. And I think back 10, 20 years ago, it made more sense because just having any sort of community helped. But I think when we're in this minefield territory, it's okay, well then let's deal with this as its own thing, because guess what? The T has its own array of letters after it now anyway, in terms of the different types of T you can be. So let's be very specific here. And, you know, I know that we were saying that we just want to get past it, but the one thing that's not happening is the conversation isn't being... There's no transparency in the conversation. I tried to have a conversation with someone, Monroe Bergdorf, a few years ago about the trans thing, and I got sort of thrown under the bus for even daring. It's like, I shouldn't ask. You shouldn't need to know. It's like, well, then what are you fighting for? If I'm not allowed to ask if you're a male or a female, then what are you fighting for? And, you know, and I'm not trying to offend you when I ask that. Just like if someone asks me about my accent, I'm not going to be childish enough to say, how dare you ask me if I'm British, or as most people would say, American Australian. You know, it's...
You sound very definitely British, by the way.
You should come to America. And it's funny, because then when I go back to England now, they think I sound Australian, which is fucking bizarre to me, because I think I sound very British. But obviously there's some kind of twang that happens now and then that I'm not aware of anymore. But yeah, anyway, it's because I care very much about this community, as it were. I don't want to see the community eat itself alive with its own sort of hierarchy of victimhood. And I don't want any of these people to be victims. My uncle/auntie... you know, could have married a woman as a man. So his sexuality did not change, and his sexuality has got nothing to do with his gender. And he did it when it wasn't cool to do it. And I think that's the other dangerous thing that we're entering now, is people getting into this community for the wrong reasons. You know, just because I hang out with gay people all the time doesn't mean I need to have sex with them. And there's a lot of people who claim to be gay to further their careers in the entertainment industry. You know, it's all about sexual harassment, sexual exploitation, and self-prostitution, exploiting, you know, a community like that. It's crazy. There's so many aspects to it. There's so many ways to look at it, and we're just being so vague. And everyone just wants clickbait. Everyone just... This is the other... We're not... What you're doing is great, because you're letting me speak unedited, whereas if you look at a lot of these media outlets, they're just looking for that one hot-button phrase, that one statement. And they're making the statement the point, rather than the statement being part of a broader point.
Right. And
that's got to stop.
And it was interesting that you say that, because when you're speaking, I am legitimately sitting here thinking what he is saying is going to be taken out of context by people.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to be in deep shit. he's gonna get himself in deep shit.
Yeah. No, I don't care, because if the one thing that happens in this new world that we live in, don't forget, I live in Hollywood, so I am at the precipice of the cultural revolution that is currently going on within the LGBT community. There's always a new letter being added.
There's also I and several A's, but go on.
Yes, and I live right next door to Canada as well, which is now, you know, it's illegal for you to misgender someone incorrectly. And I could have theoretically sued in San Jose the other day, and I was in a CVS, which is like a sort of a, you know, drugstore. And
right, a Walgreens type thing.
Yeah. And I said, do you have a bathroom? And the nice South American chap said to me, sorry, that the men's bathroom is out of order. And I walked out, and there was part of me that was like, I could theoretically walk back into this CVS right now with a lawyer and sue them for misgendering me. Because I could have turned around and I could have said, with a beard, and looking the way that I do, and said, I'm a woman. And that man has no idea what I'm talking about. I guarantee that man has no idea. And what would happen in that situation? And that's the world that we live in right now. And we're not having a serious conversation about this. I could have sued a pharmacist for not letting me use the woman's bathroom if I wanted to play that game, that very dangerous game. And we're not allowed to have the conversation. What I'm saying right now is literally like throwing dynamite in a firework factory. And that's ludicrous. Because if you keep on barricading off things that we can't talk about, no one cared that my uncle is a woman now who's married to a woman. No one cares. No one should care. But if you keep on making subject matter sort of this forbidden thing that we can't discuss, and then when you do discuss it, you just turn into a mindless, screaming, shrieking lunatic, like with the sort of how dare you, and you just start throwing the ists and isms at the person, you know, bringing up a point. You're not having an honest conversation. And that's one thing that annoys me about the pop music industry. None of these brave, strong, like Taylor Swift, etc., you know, saying she's not going to put her music on Apple Music. And the fact that she gets thrown under the bus because she doesn't talk about right-wing people or whatever, and now apparently she's a Nazi sympathizer. This is how easy we have it in the West. These are our problems. Like, these are the fake problems that we're making up for ourselves. You know, this is the world that we live in, where we're complaining about dumb shit. I'm so proud of the man that I've never met, Andrew, who's now Joanna. You know, he didn't ask for any help in transitioning. You know, he didn't make a big deal out of it. And that was in the 70s, and then through the 80s and the 90s, and then the 2000s. And he's now, it basically looks like a grandma, from what I've seen in photographs. And that's where we should all be. It's like, just get on with it. Life's shit. Life is hard. We're not all equal, and we need. And that sucks when you say that to people. It's like, yeah, if we were all equal, the world would be so fucking boring, you know. And life is a struggle, so people need to just, you know, fucking. I won't say man up, because that might offend someone, but you know what I mean.
Right.
That's great. It's hilarious. And I remember when the gay community used to be the community that didn't give a fuck. Now it's all holier than thou. It's just so weird to me, not gay specifically, because most gay people I know, they don't even want that to be a thing that's acknowledged in a room. That's the thing that's so weird, is the gay community was trying so hard to blend in, and it's like there's this small minority of people who are like, no, I don't want to blend in. I want to be gay. I want everyone to know that I'm gay. I want everyone to know that I'm trans. It's like, I don't go around saying to everyone that I went to boarding school, and that matters. No, it doesn't fucking matter. No one cares. You know, you either want to get past it or you don't. You just want something to complain about, and you want to feel like you're part of a community that's constantly seeking justice. You know, because everyone has a football team, and everyone, you know, wants to have something, give their life meaning. Being gay is enough for some people, or being, you know, that's like their thing. And that's with the community that sort of, you know, emphasizes that sort of mindset, which is like, well, we just stick together. It's like, well, you either want to stick together or you want to blend in. If you look at Soho and West London, and even West Hollywood, like, it's changing. it's becoming less, you know, in part, like, gay, as it were.
It is. And so so is the Castro in San Francisco.
There's a shrinking minority who are like, this sucks. I go, well, does it? Because I thought you wanted, equality. You know, so do you want to go to straight bars and sort of actually help sort of defuse the sort of constant psychotic machismo of heterosexual males in bars by having a few, like, some gay people there just to relax the situation a bit? Or do you want to just only be surrounded by your own kind? Which sounds like segregationism to me, which has not ever gone down well in the past.
From my
minefield opened.
Yeah, well, from my perspective, what I want is the ability to be myself without fear of persecution, without fear of retaliation, but I do not, I've never really wanted the ability to blend in, because I feel that I don't blend in. And what we've talked about earlier in terms of music and things of that nature, I don't want to be that replica of, you know, last summer's Fifth Harmony song. I'm my own song.
Well, here's the thing. When you say stand out, right, because I know a thing about blending in, but blending in, for me, for the world that I come from, like, I remember, like, having straight men who would dress up as women on TV, and so that is the normal for me. Like, that is a world where I'm like, that isn't, like, that's what I mean. Like, you walking down the street looking fabulous in your full getup, that should be the norm. I'm not saying you don't stand out. I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but, you know, Dame Edna, I mean, of course, like, not the best example, but I grew up watching Dame Edna on TV. Do you know Dame Edna?
I've met Dame Edna. I've interviewed her, yes.
Amazing. Right, so there we go. So, like, that to me was like, I grew up watching, and I had my grandfather who fought in World War II laughing. I had my, you know, my mom, like, laughing or whatever, and, you know, of course, I know it's like this sort of like cliche kind of tropey, you know, example of that. But and of course, people were laughing for not particularly the most positive reason. Some of them were laughing with and some were laughing at. But my point is, we should be okay with that. You should be able to walk down the street and not be, you know, where Willem says, like, you know, the only footwear I wear is footwear that I can run away in. Like, you know, that's, you don't want to be living in a world like that. And so, yeah, I want normal to be you being whatever the fuck you want it to be. You know, as long as you're not hurting anyone, you know. And that's the thing.
Well,
the golden rule, treat others as you would like to be treated, is pretty fucking simple.
Oh, my God. And I say that all the time. And it's the basis of every religion. So, really, honestly. So, well, I really do appreciate you talking today, and we just eked out another 20 minutes of conversation. I appreciate, I think it was Christine who set this up for us.
Yes.
So when she asked,
yes, she will be, she's my partner, so. Yeah.
So when she asked about how long, I said, oh, probably 20 to 30 minutes, and now we've gone triple that. Quadruple that. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk. And as I said, it's been very enlightening. And I'll keep my fingers crossed for you that the blowback from what you've had to say will be minimal. So
okay. If anyone's offended, they can talk to me or they can block me. I don't really care.
And I'm going to also.
You shouldn't care either.
I'm also going to tweet you that Taylor Swift cover that I mentioned. Just,
yes, please. Yes,
I would love your thoughts on it. Just, you know,
yeah.
Your feedback. Well, thank you, Vincent, for talking. I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing what's to come from you and building a rapport so maybe that you can come back in the future and talk about your new angst.
Absolutely. I'm full of angst. So there's always something to talk about.
That's wonderful.
You taking the time and asking some sensible questions.
All right. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
And you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was pop music producer Frank Music, also known as Vincent Frank in his personal life. But Frank Music has appeared on hits for RuPaul, produced a 2011 album for Erasure, as well as worked with one of our recent guests, Brian Justin Crum. He's previously of America's Got Talent, but Frank Music will be producing a significant portion of his upcoming album, as well as his new single, which is titled Wildside. Go check out Brian Justin Crum Wildside on YouTube now. You are listening to Party Foul Radio. I am Poya Del Mar, and we will be back right after this. Keep up to date on everything happening in the San Francisco Bay Area and Northern California queer nightlife scene. Pick up your copy of Left Magazine today in San Francisco's Castro District, or visit Left Magazine online at liveleft.com. Liveleft.com. Left Magazine is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio. All right, listeners, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Poya Del Mar, and I'm also the producer of Party Foul Radio, meaning that over the course of the last year, I've had the opportunity to bring you, in conjunction with my homegirl, Miss Pearl Tees, some amazing celebrity interviews. And now, as we kick off 2018, we are going to take a retrospective look at some of our favorite guests from across the past year. It's hard to find someone out there who doesn't love adorable Ross Matthews. Of course, Ross has become a favorite of ours first for his time on Tonight Show with Jay Leno, then for his work with Chelsea Handler, and now, of course, he can be found every week returning on January 25th as a guest judge or a panel judge on RuPaul's Drag Race, Season 3 of All Stars, kicking off on January 25th. Ross joined us on episode 84 to talk about his tenure with RuPaul's Drag Race and much, much more. Again, to find the entire episode featuring Ross Matthews, head back to episode 84. But now I take you to one of my favorite parts of my conversation with Ross Matthews.
Because of the fact that we talk about how the show does, in a beautiful way, expose gay stories that make us vulnerable and human to people who watch. We're not just gay people. We're people who have parental problems, or we're people who have, you know, economic, you know, disadvantages, whatever the case may be, allowing people to relate to us. As a person who is obviously very out there in the community and very much a member of it, do you feel some kind of a personal responsibility to represent in a certain way I'm just curious if there's the concept behind any element of what you do that you have become an unofficial spokesperson. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel the pressure only within myself, and it's only because I feel something that wasn't there when I was a kid. I grew up in a farm town, and I knew I was gay, and I didn't know what a grown-up gay person looked like.
Right.
Nobody on TV. There was nobody in movies that I could point to and say, oh, okay, my life could be like that. I could be open and happy and successful and have a partner. I mean, think about that. I really thought to myself, what is the future for me? You know, what does it even look like? I couldn't picture it. And so when I got on television, even, you know, when I started in 2001 in the early Tonight Show days, I said to myself, like,
I love how you sort of swallowed that year, by the way. You're like,
Say what?
I loved how you sort of like swallowed the year, because you're like, in 2000.
One, 2001, 2000, I've been on TV, 16 years I've been going on TV. And, but I remember thinking then, like, okay, be that example you've never had. Be that example. And so that's always driven me. And people tell me now, that's why I didn't mean to follow your stuff on. Because people come up to me now and say, I've been watching you since I used to, like, stay awake when I was in, you know, sixth grade and watch you on Leno. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, how great for them. This little gay kid could point at the TV and see this big gay clown named Ross Matthews and think, wow, you know, look, my parents are smiling when he's on TV. They must like gay people. Or, oh, look, he's grown up and not afraid or embarrassed about who he is. Maybe I shouldn't be. You know? And there's a lot of us now, but
it's always I really think that that's super important, and I think the idea of being the example or being the person that you did not have is something that any of us who are socially conscious kind of think. I mean, I on a very localized level, I feel that same way, because there are people who have, like, I was the first drag queen they ever saw at an 18 and over club or something. You know what I mean? And I'm like, if I'm a horrible person, they're going to think that that's what this is about. Or, you know, I tried to let that motivate me as a little bit as a human.
Yeah, I love that.
So you have done, you've had so many opportunities and you've worked with incredible people. I mean, you're obviously you're on RuPaul and you spent a great deal of time with Chelsea Handler. I remember you called her and you left a voicemail from the stage at Gay Day at Great America. But I mean, has there been a moment or a celebrity or an individual that you worked with and you were like, oh my gay gods, this is actually happening? One of the things, you know, as a viewer or as an audience member who has watched your evolution, I will say that I think one of the most charming things about you to this day is that you have that, you've not crossed that line from very well-known and established entertainer who is a huge fan of people into that realm of celebrity where you're like, this is my world and of course I hang out with this person.
Let me say, I've seen people, like, I've seen friends of mine who have crossed over into that line, and I know exactly what you're talking about, where it's like, oh my God, you're no longer one of us, an observer, you now become one of them, the famous people, you know? And I totally get what you mean, and no matter what success I achieve in my life, and nothing more that I do, I will never cross that line.
That was, of course, adorable Ross Matthews from episode 85 of Party Foul Radio. Catch Ross and all of your RuPaul's Drag Race favorites when RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 3 returns to VH1 Network on Thursday, January 25th. Also on episode 84 of Party Foul Radio, we had with us Oscar-nominated actress Elizabeth Shue discussing her then-current historic biopic of tennis great Billie Jean King. The Battle of the Sexes was released and is now available on Blu-ray DVD as of January 1st. But during our interview, I was talking to Elizabeth about the labels that are applied to Billie Jean King as she exists now in the memories of people, and whether or not Battle of the Sexes should be considered an LGBTQ-specific film. Let's take you now to Elizabeth Shue.
Ultimately, the world exists on labels, you know, because I think that now in society, Billie Jean King is remembered probably less as a tennis great and more as a lesbian icon or symbol of LGBT empowerment. I think that, I really think that no matter how incredible somebody is, if they are gay, they are a gay comic, they are a gay actor, they are a gay musician. That label always, we haven't evolved past that, I don't think, Elizabeth.
Really? Well, I definitely have evolved past that, so I just assume that everyone else has. I can't imagine, I don't see her that way. That's just so, not at all, like zero part of me sees her that way. And I know my daughters don't see her that way. I think our next younger generation is incredibly more evolved than even my generation and then the generation before. So I know in my heart that things are changing for the better. It's just so slow and annoying that there still are people out there that are small-minded and fearful and take their own judgments out on other people because they really don't like themselves. I know that that's the reason. If you really feel whole and you accept yourself and love yourself, there's no reason to go out and judge anybody else. What would be the point?
Oh, absolutely, and especially when it comes to sexuality, there's no reason to be uncomfortable with somebody else's sexuality if you're comfortable in your own. It's like, well,
Okay, so it doesn't interest you. There's a lot of things that don't interest me, but I don't have to, like, tear it down. It just doesn't interest me.
Yeah. Well, that's because you feel whole. You feel like you're okay the way you are.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's all fear. All judgment and prejudice comes from fear.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because in more recent years, we've known you for roles on television a little bit more. There was a time, of certainly, when people who were movie stars did not do television. And I was curious, was your move towards television more recently based on a lack of film roles for actresses who are not 25?
Not really. I mean, I feel like I've always had a up and down career. I don't see it ever just been sailing smoothly right to the top. It's kind of been a bumpy road, and I think it's different. I think there was a good, like, 10-year period where, yes, there were not too many great opportunities in film, but I just scrounged around and kind of kept working and kept having my family, and the balance was right because I actually have three children, and I really love being a mom, and I would have hated so much to have missed out on any of their moments. So I'm really grateful that I could just plug along and barely stay in it. But at some certain point, I did need to help out with the finances of the family, and I realized that I was putting that burden on my husband too much. He's a documentarian, and it was a little unfair for him to take that all on. So I tried to find something that I could both make a living at and also really respected the people involved. And so CSI actually worked for 3.5 years. I adore Ted Danson, and the cast members in that show are, you know, just top-notch people, and the crew and the producers, all of them are just really, really hardworking, lovely, lovely people. So those 3.5 years were well spent with them. Now, I think if I would go do television, I would try to find something that's incredibly character-driven, something that would really inspire me as an actress fully. And so I'm always open to that and looking for that constantly and trying to develop something on my own.
You're a hustler.
Yeah, there are very few parts in movies, it's obvious.
Right.
For even for young people who are dramatic actresses, it's a tough time. And thank God that television is, I think most of the great writing and most of the great storytelling is now changed and gone to television, which is why everybody's there.
That was, of course, Oscar-nominated actress Elizabeth Shue. Go check out Battle of the Sexes, now available on Blu-ray and DVD. The last couple of years, Pentatonix has blown up across the internet and around the world as a 3-time Grammy-winning a cappella group. But this year was a year of solo projects for members of the Pentatonix, not the least of whom was Kirsten Maldonado. Kirsten released her debut solo EP, L-O-V-E, Love, earlier this year. And I had the opportunity to talk to Kirsten about that project, as well as much of the impact that Pentatonix has had. If you would like to hear all of Kirsten's interview, she was on episode 80 of Party Foul Radio. But now I am here to ask her about what it was like to work with iconic Dolly Parton.
As a drag performer, Dolly Parton is one of my all-time inspirations for drag. And I'm dying to know what it was like to work with such a legend.
It was amazing. She is so beautiful, and, like, we walked in there, it was very early in the morning, and she was, like, so amazing and glittery and gorgeous and was so nice, and, yeah, she was just amazing. I, like, couldn't believe we were there. I felt like a potato next to her. It was, like, she was just amazing. And I just, like, it's really cool to meet someone that has been, like, in the music industry for so long and so successful, and yet she's still, like, so nice. Like, it's so kind, and it's just, like, so, I love seeing that, because it's so inspiring, you know, I always wonder if, like, people get kind of, like, jaded at the end of the day, you know, if they've been doing it for a long time, and they're, like, just constantly thrown by it, or, you know, get the same thing over and over, I'm like, are they just, like, so over it? But she is not. She was, like, so sweet and having the best time, and it was awesome.
it's lovely to know that not only is she iconic within the community for being, and I mean the LGBTQ community specifically, because she is like a fashion icon of gaudy and gorgeous and all of these things that I've always aspired to be, but she is so supportive as well and has been for decades when it was not a cool thing.
She's perfect, basically.
So, with your solo album coming out, a solo project from Superfruit coming out, and Avi has left the group, is Pentatonics done?
No, Pentatonics are not done. We will have to find a new person, and then we'll continue on. And it'll be different, but, you know, I think it wouldn't be the same, you know, and it shouldn't be the same because one of our members is leaving.
When I first discovered you guys as a group, I was rather blown away by the kind of social impact that an a cappella group was having in the 20-teens, you know what I mean? Like, is that still surprising to you, the kind of acceptance and widespread success that the group was able to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about just, like, connecting with your fan base, whether it's, like, through the music or through what we're talking about online, or, you know, just saying that, like, yeah, we did choir when we were young, and, you know, don't make people make you feel like it's not cool or that you're doing something strange, you know. I think people just, we're in a day and age where it's not like how old movie stars used to be, where it was like they were too glamorous. You couldn't touch them. It's like, we're in a day and age where it's like, there's so much going on, and there's so much social media and beautiful people and et cetera, et cetera. But, like, people kind of today want to feel, like, relatable, and they want to feel like they understand you. And like, that's what music is about. It's about, like, sharing experiences and people feeling something. And I think if you're, like, not relatable as an artist, it's going to be harder for people to latch on to your music and to what you're saying.
That was Kirsten Maldonado on episode 80 of Party Foul Radio. Download Kirsten's debut solo EP, Love, L-O-V-E, available now on iTunes. 2017 was also a big year for Pentatonics members Scott Hoying and Mitch Grossi. As Superfruit, they released their album Future Friends Parts 1 and 2, and they joined us on episode 82 of Party Foul Radio to talk about their experiences as an openly gay recording duo, as best friends, and as members of Pentatonics. Now we take you to my interview with Scott and Mitch of Superfruit from episode 82.
I was wondering, with the process of kind of splintering off into Superfruit from Pentatonics and the work that you've done there, has that altered the relationship that you have with other members of the group as a whole?
No, not at all. No, we're all, you know, we all do our own thing, and we all have different creative passions and ideas that, you know, that we couldn't necessarily execute in Pentatonics. So it's nice to have our own separate creative outlets. But we're all very supportive of each other.
Yeah, I think it's helped us a lot because in Pentatonics, we all, the five of us, have to get on the same page for everything we do. And so sometimes we sacrifice, like, personal things for that. And so I feel like it's nice that we each have our solo project to kind of express ourselves individually.
Yeah, I talked to Kirsten last week, and she said that, you know, for her, the idea of putting out a solo project allowed her to explore avenues that, as a group, would not work. And I was wondering if you guys kind of feel the same way.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, for one, Pentatonics is a cappella. So there's a limited sort of space you can kind of explore musically in that sense.
With the release of your solo work and your original music, it's actually made me a fan of the two of you in a way that I was not previously, because of the fact that it gives you a musical voice. And I was wondering if you could talk about the kind of sound that you've chosen for the two of you.
Yeah, I feel like Superfruit is, our music is, it's a very good representation of sort of our musical common ground as people and as musicians, because we both have very different tastes, but I feel like we both really enjoy musicality, and we both really enjoy funk and summer anthems, and, I mean, and pop music at its very core.
So it's been fun to sort of explore what pop music means to us.
Yeah, it's decidedly poppy, and I was saying right before we were connected that as a body of work, it feels like you could put this on and it would be that gay slumber party that I dreamed of having when I was like a little quiet teenager.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about the imagery that you reflect in all of your music videos. It's so bright and so colorful. And I'm trying to remember which video it was where you're reminding me of that red monster that Bugs Bunny, like, kind of does his hair.
Vacation, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was just wondering about that kind of imagery that you guys project. It's so bright and colorful.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we wanted to do. I feel like our friendship is just so fun and upbeat and colorful, and we wanted to kind of communicate that through our looks and through our videos. We just wanted it to be fun and free and liberated.
Mm-hmm. Liberated is a good word.
So, do you not feel liberated in the confines of Pentatonix?
Oh, no, we absolutely do. I mean, it's not about, yeah, it's different. We're definitely ourselves in Pentatonix, but it's a different sort of demographic. I mean, there is an overlap, but we're catering to a different crowd.
There's a lot of science to our personality, too. I feel like Pentatonix, Mitch and I grew up doing theater and choir. We were like such choir nerds. And in Pentatonix, it kind of satisfies that part of ourselves. But then we're also, like, gay and fun and, like, best friends. And so Superfruit is more that side of it.
That was Scott Hoying and Mitch Grossi of Superfruit. They are two-fifths of platinum-selling, three-time Grammy-winning group Pentatonix. Pick up their album, Future Friends, Parts 1 and 2, now available on iTunes. Or check out the entire interview on episode 82 of Party Foul Radio. By the way, in case you haven't noticed, every single episode of Party Foul Radio is star-studded, full of fun, informative celebrity interviews. Never miss an episode of Party Foul Radio by following us online at Facebook and Twitter. Find us both at Party Foul Radio. That's Party Foul Radio on Facebook and Twitter, so you never have to rely on a recap episode like this one to find out who our next celebrity guest is going to be.
Actress Patricia Arquette has obviously captivated audiences, both as an Oscar-winning performer in the film Boyhood, as well as her longtime Emmy-winning role on television's Medium. But I have never known her to be more captivating, more iconic, and more interesting, much less more heart-wrenching, than she was on episodes 85 and 86 during our two-part Party Foul Radio interview with Patricia. During that interview, she talked about her political views, her role as a political activist in a Hollywood that does not embrace those with political points of view, as well as her sister, Alexis Arquette, and more importantly, opened up to us on part two of that interview on episode 86 about her sister's devastating, devastating loss in her battle against HIV and AIDS. We now join the part one of our interview with Oscar winner Patricia Arquette, taken from episode 85 of Party Foul Radio.
One of the causes that seems to be of specific interest to you is as relates to the LGBTQ community. And, of course, we're well aware of the relationship with your sister Alexis and all that transpired publicly with her. But I was curious if your connection to the community pre-existed that.
Well, no. I mean, I really think that Alexis's personal journey of finding herself exposed our whole family to the LGBTQ experience as family members. You know, I remember when Alexis was little and dressing up as a girl and lining up in the girls' line and getting in trouble at school for that and her not even understanding exactly why she was doing that. And then coming out as gay and you know, dealing with the ramifications of that and the fear the fears of that, my mother's fears that she would get hurt in the world, and then the beginning of AIDS and the fear of that. And so I think a lot of it, my observation of it and my personal interest started early on because of the Lexus. And really my acute awareness that there was a different America, different set of rules, and a substandard set of a substandard justice system set up for LGBTQ people. You know, I was constantly worried about Alexis in this world, and how she would be treated in the world, because it just, so I think without Alexis' journey, I don't know that I would be as aware as I am. I'm sure I would still have empathy, but I don't know that I would really have watched, I want to say, thousands and thousands of her experiences of discrimination throughout her life.
Yeah, I mean, in asking that question, I came in with the awareness that it's very difficult to even imagine what your exposure would have been without having a sibling so close in age who was in the public spotlight as part of the community for many, many years. And the majority of her public life, to be honest, that would have to undoubtedly, I mean, I think of my own family, and certainly my experience colors theirs and their exposure and awareness. So it's something that that I knew in advance was probable, but I was just always curious about that.
But you also, you know, it's a different thing when it's somebody you love and they're experiencing discrimination in real time in the world. It's you know, it's one thing when you read about a political agenda, but when you're hearing about like someone being discriminated against by a nurse or a doctor or, you know, trying to get a cup of coffee. All of these little whittling away, dehumanizing experiences that you see your loved one go through, I think also really educates you to the mass how it is to be LGBTQ in America, or how it has been, and I hope that that's changing. And I think it is changing a lot. For the better, but also every time you turn around, there's some new governmental push to take away basic human civil rights from the LGBTQ community and silence them, and it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And the other element of even knowing that your relationship with her had to have colored your own experience is based on decision making of your own and your family's, because you made the decision to be supportive of a family member that you loved. And it's an unfortunate reality that even with having an LGBTQ child or transgender child or family member, friend, that the decision to be supportive of that and to be understanding, compassionate, and educate yourself so that you can better interact and support that individual is 100% choice. And so many people don't make that choice.
I know, it's horrifying. I mean, it kills me when I hear how many people turn away from their families turn away from them when they come out. When they just start living their truth. Alexis has been one of the greatest gifts of my whole life, you know. Alexis has been my great friend, my sibling, my teacher, and also my hero and heroine in so many ways. but I'll tell you what, had our family turned away, we would be the ones missing out, for sure.
Again, that was Oscar winner Patricia Arquette. You can catch the snippet of interview that we just heard on episode 85 of Party Foul Radio. And on episode 86, Patricia opens up about her sister's battle with and ultimately succumbing to HIV/AIDS in 2016. Patricia remains a friend of the podcast and one of my personal favorite interviews of all time. I'm overcome with emotions just thinking about our conversation, and I cannot thank Patricia enough for sharing her memories of her sister, as well as her thoughts and opinions on issues surrounding the LGBTQ community with Party Foul Radio. Also on episode 85 with Patricia was up-and-coming music producer Griffin. It's a great listen. Go check it out. And no recap of 2017 would be complete without our most listened to interview of the year. Kelly Clarkson is one of the biggest names in pop music and is a country crossover hit as well. Her new album, Meaning of Life, came out in November, and we had the original American Idol on to talk about what is so special about her new album and why it's not only the most authentic work of her career, but also to relate her feelings of being put in a box to other friends in the industry who happen to be members of the LGBTQ community. Here, Kelly talks on National Coming Out Day, revealing information about the new album and discussing how being gay shaped and changed the career of probably the biggest name in country music songwriting today. Shane McAnally is a longtime friend and collaborator with Kelly, and here she talks about his journey as an out artist.
You can look at like my previous records, and I mean, you can hear a suppressed individual. Like, all the songs, like, regardless if I wrote them or if I was a vessel for them, I just constantly felt pushed into a box. Like, and that's a lot of artists say that, but it's just a very hard thing for an artist to live like that, to ask someone who we just automatically think creatively and emotionally, and to ask them to not be themselves or try or do something else because it's going to make you money or have to compromise because they're going to sit on your record. Like, it's, you know, and then your whole team suffers. Like, then you don't tour and your band suffers. Like, so you just carry all this weight on you just to keep everyone afloat. And it's wearing. It's devastating to somebody, especially who I feel everything, which is so annoying. Like, I had a conversation with Reba years ago, and she was like, man, she's like, you just feel too much. Like, you are 100% in everything. And I'm like, are you not? I was like, wait, what? And she was like, no, she's like, I mean, I am, but like, she's like, I just, you're like a different type of personality. Like, you take on everything. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to, I would really love to know how not to, like, if there's a class I can take or something. But you know, it's just it's just this record, when you are a creative person, you are a very emotional person in a good way. You know, it's amazing to be a part of a project that is 100% you and like 100% your personality, and no one's holding you back. They were supporting you to be you, you know. That's 15 years later, that's my first time experiencing that.
Well, first of all, I'm always gagged that you can say, like, I was talking to Reba, because Reba McEntire, of course, being one of my, also my favorite artists.
Oh, she's awesome.
I mean, I know the relationship. I mean, I'm not, but that just kills me. And the second thing that I was thinking about is that we're talking on National Coming Out Day, you know, like, so is it...
Oh, I know.
As an LGBT writer and journalist, when you talk about being suppressed, like, the first thing I think about is all of the artists in history who've had to hide their identity to make sure that their music sold, or because the record label wanted, you know, that's what came to my mind.
Oh, gosh, absolutely. I mean, even people that aren't gay. I mean, there have been people that are, I mean, even like the Mariahs or Whitneys of the world, you know, they... they, you know, were suppressed in a certain way. It came out afterwards, you know, and then Mariah ended up going the way she kind of wanted to go. And, you know, and Whitney, it's highly documented that, you know, she felt, you know, suppressed in this box. And she was much more of a fun, you know, personality than this, like, perfect angelic singer that we all were fed. You know what I'm saying? She was much, there was much more to her personality than that. And I feel like, you know, when you're told, oh, you can't do this because we want you to, you know, I have other friends in the industry, you know, they're, that, okay, one of them is a huge writer in Nashville, Shane McAnally. Well, he tried to do his career. He's a phenomenal writer. He's had like a bajillion number ones now. But back in the day when he was someone's assistant, you know, shuffling coffee around because nobody would give him the time of day because he was gay, and it, you can't make it as a country singer and say, no, you're gay. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe it's a little different now and it's changing now, but, you know, over a decade ago, it wasn't that way. So, you know, he had to go about his whole career in a different way, which has worked out for him. He's a phenomenal writer and is doing stuff with Broadway. I mean, he's insane, you know, with all the things he's accomplishing. But it's a, what's sad about that for me as a friend watching for years is he could have sang all that shit himself. Like, he could have done all that himself. He's a great singer. He's an amazing performer. But it's like, you know, nobody could get past that. And it's a shame.
That was superstar Kelly Clarkson talking about Academy of Country Music Songwriter of the Year multiple times, Shane McAnally, as well as others in the industry who, like herself, have felt suppressed by record labels who did not want to allow them to put out authentic work. Check out the highly authentic Meaning of Life by Kelly Clarkson. It is available for download now. It is also, in my opinion, the best record of her career. That is our recap of some of our favorite moments of 2017 on Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar, your co-host and producer, and we will be back with more Party Foul Radio. And to wrap up the first episode of 2018, episode 98, right after this. By the way, if you would like to get more of that Kelly Clarkson interview, go back and check out 87. That's episode 87. It is a full interview with Kelly Clarkson. It's incredible. She's incredible, and you are incredible for listening. We'll be back in a moment. Follow Party Foul Radio on social media. On Facebook and Twitter, we can be found at Party Foul Radio. Follow Poyo Del Mar on Twitter, The Glamazon PDM. And follow Pearl Tees on Twitter at Pearl Tees. That's PearlTeese. You're listening to Party Foul Radio, Podomatic's number one LGBTQ podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hallelujah, this is Sandra, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
Clock the bag.
Clock the shoe.
Clock the shoe.
Now punch the clock. It's time to work.
All right, you guys, we are wrapping up the very last podcast of 2017.
Bye, 2017.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye.
I'm Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees. I hope you guys enjoyed this, I don't know if you can call it a lovely year, but this year with us.
Yes, well, aside from all the incredible and wretched and dreadful and shocking things that have happened over the course of the last year, there have been plenty of good things that have happened in 2017, too.
There has.
So, Pearl, what was your favorite thing that you can think of that happened in 2017? You had some great things, girl.
I had some great things. I would say probably my little brother moving in with me.
Aww.
Definitely.
That's so sweet because you know I expected her to mention one of those crowns that she won at some pageant or...
That, oh yeah, actually that happened too, but...
Or you getting know, her job at Asia SF.
That too, but I mean... I'm much less materialistic than that.
No, she's not.
I'm not.
She is not.
No, but seriously, my little brother moving in was by far the best thing that's happened to me in 2017. My house has changed. My mood around the house has changed. The way I live in my house has changed. It's just been so much better. But, you know, getting, you know, winning Miss Premier International and... becoming one of the new ladies of Asia SF are really, really close runners up to that.
Well, I mean, I I actually don't think that, for example, the appreciation that you have for joining Asia SF is materialistic at all, because I know that that is a career goal for you. Yeah. It was a career goal for a long time. I remember you mentioning it, like, kind of even it being on your radar, even when we started the podcast 2 years ago.
Right.
So for you to accomplish that is something, you know, right, worth celebrating. And I think
I'm going to be able to celebrate with these hoes in New Year's.
That is lovely.
Yeah. What about you?
Oh, my gosh. What is my favorite thing from 2017? Interestingly enough, like, I don't think that I have, like, a highlight like your brother moving in. I mean, I definitely think that it's really difficult for me to try to remember what my highlight was. I always am so really, honestly, so grateful for all kinds of amazing things that happened for me. In terms of, like, career highlights for me, I definitely think that being able to launch my wrestling podcast, like, a few months ago was a real highlight for me that was something that, if you listen to this podcast regularly, you know that my passion for pro wrestling and, like, that has been something that has been, like, on the horizon. Definitely getting to participate with all the wrestling for charity stuff and sort of being embraced.
Yeah, actually being able to wrestle.
Yeah, being embraced in that community has been a real highlight for me. The reason that these are so important to me is these are all kind of things that I think that growing up with my interest in wrestling, but recognizing who I am as a member of the LGBTQ community, it felt like these things would definitely be out of reach for me, mm-hmm, or not acceptable or not embraced by the people that would be required to embrace them for them to be successful, like people within the wrestling community or people who... actual pro wrestlers, like, you know, I've gotten some really huge named wrestlers to be on my podcast already. And that is huge for me because even 10 years ago, I don't think that
it would have been possible.
Even 5 years ago. And I recently interviewed the newly crowned NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and he posted on his Facebook, like, I was interviewed by a drag queen. Those are words I never thought I'd say. Yeah. And part of me was like, yes, like, that's who I am, but I'm like, well, I felt a little bit minimized. I was like, there's a lot more to me than just being a drag queen. I'm also, uh-huh, like, an internationally recognized journalist. There is that part of me. Like, my persona...
Or a legitimate wrestling fan, what I mean?
Yeah, all of those things. But that, I think, was definitely a big career highlight for me, and so that's something very big that happened for me. You know, more recently, like I said, a lot of things negative happened this year. And when I say those things, I specifically think of, like, politically and stuff like that. But one of the things that I became kind of really acutely aware of yesterday on Christmas that happened that changed my life in a way that I'm okay with, but I do miss, was the end of the Glamazone, the end of my show at the cafe.
Right.
Because last night, you know, the last crew of people that were at my party were mostly girls that have come into my life because I hosted that show, and, mm-hmm, like, and we were reminiscing about fun times that we had, and, you know, and I very definitely miss my presence in the community that way. I miss having a show that on a regular basis, and especially after 7 years of that show, like, so many people came into my life as a result of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like it could be considered, like, a bad thing that happened, but what I can also say from it is that yesterday made me finally recognize, like, okay, this ended, and I think that there's probably a need for me to return to something like that in, mm-hmm, 2018, because I miss that kind of presence in the community.
Yeah.
And I miss that kind of interaction on a regular basis with audiences and the other girls and stuff like that. And I don't get that kind of connection just from doing bookings. You know what I mean? Like, I show up and it's fun, but being the hostess of a show, being a producer of an event like that is something altogether different. So I think in 2018, you guys locally at least will see probably me back in a club environment on a consistent basis,
mm-hmm,
probably. And that thought is very exciting to me. And in a way, like I was saying, like, the loss of my show at the cafe could be a bad thing, but at the same time,
it could be a turning point.
It also made me aware that I had grown really stagnant feeling there, and I kind of, like, taken it for granted. I did not ever take for granted the relationships that I had there, but remembering why it was that I wanted to do that in the first place was very important.
Yeah.
So that is something, like, it was a wake-up call to me. So I'm grateful for that to have happened. And I look forward to that. And you guys, the applications for Empress are out and available. So I'm going to be getting that together. And there'll be more to come on that in 2018 as January rolls forward, as we move towards the election for Empress. I 100%, my name is in the running for that right now. My hat's been thrown in the ring, or whatever you want to say about it. So yeah, we will look towards that. So 2018's got a lot of big things ahead for us.
Right. I can't wait for 2018. There's so much happening. I think I'll be running for another national pageant.
Good for you, girl.
We'll see how that goes. And I have my step down coming up. And like I said, hopefully I'll save up close enough to get these hips. We'll see. 2018. We're coming for you, bitch.
Here we come, girls and boys. All right, you guys. This has been Party Foul Radio, the last episode of 2017.
Episode 98.
98, girl. Just 2 weeks into the new year, bitch. Pearl's going to hit her triple digits.
Right,
honey.
We need something special for 100, girl. We need, like, a special guest or a special... It's just something special. Just
I've got an idea. For episode 100, Pearl can get laryngitis. That way we will not have to hear her. Oh, hey, bitch!
Whatever.
Oh, so special to me. Celebrate!
Right. It's my personal... It's my gift. My New Year's gift.
All right, you guys. This has been the end of the year. We hope that you and everyone around you has a wonderful, safe, very safe,
please,
and happy new year. We will be back with you in 2018 for more fun, more party, more foul, more everything.
Right.
More radio, bitch.
Right.
I'm Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl T.
Bye.
Bye. It's over. It's over. It's over. She's the one. Girl.